Hello, I'm Morris O'Keefe, and you're very welcome to this edition of Voices from the Archives. Our most recent collection on Irish life and lore is The Landed Gentry in Ireland. And while working on this project, I visited the McCalmonts of originally Mount Juliet and living in Norland Stud Farm. And there I met Harry McCalmont, where I did an interview, and while doing that interview, he showed me a lot of the family papers, which were just amazing, fantastic. And he suggested to me maybe they should be in an archive where they could be easily accessed. And I suggested the county library headquarters. And recently, two members of the library came with me to back down to Norland's Stud Farm to meet the McCalmonts. And Harry went through the family papers with them, and I recorded the whole session. So this podcast starts with Declan McCauley introducing himself to Harry McCalmont, followed by Leisha Dunphy, who also introduces herself.
I've worked in the library service since 1980s. I'm a qualified librarian. I also work in local studies, so I've handled this sort of material. And I think the real issue here with this is that they're unique material. So ideally, it would be handy if these were digitised, because it can provide better access for people who won't be handling the originals. And you can also put them up online, basically, so people don't have to actually travel into us. You know, they can access them, and you can get these done with OCR software now, so all this text can be actually deciphered, you know, so people can search them in all sorts of different ways.
Well, I'm working in the library 27 years. I grew up at the gates of Mount Juliet, Boher Gates, and a friend of mine lived on the estate, one of the Behans, Kay. She's in Sacramento now, but all our summers we spent running around the estate as kids, playing. You know, we were down, we learned to swim in Ballyhick, which is where the swimming was. Down at the river. I went trout fishing with my dad in the evenings. That's where, two fields down from our house. We fished there in the evenings in the summer. We went skating in the wintertime on the field near the White Bridge that used to flood. So I learned to ride. I learned to drive in Mount Juliet Estate, actually. My husband, I could tell you funny stories about my driving. But you know, like, it was such a lovely place to grow up. It really, really was. It's a special place.
I know.
And then to see it go from a family home and an estate to what it is today, it just brings me back looking at all of these and, you know, lovely childhood memories. Amazing. They look like they're a personal account of your family. And they look very, very delicate. So I totally think what Declan is saying is the correct thing, that if they're digitised, everybody can see them and access them without damaging the original, which is really important.
We've got, a pretty personal record of the times from 1909 up until 1930. As I said, unfortunately, there's a book missing between 1915 and... I can't remember what date it is, 1915 and 1919, I think, are missing. It's 1911 and 1915, I think, are missing. And I'll try and trace that through other members of my family, see if I can find them. But it's obviously a lady who meticulously cut everything out of every newspaper and every article that had any relative interest to the family. And then put them together, and these books have come down, you know, over the last 100 years in the family. Well, I don't know where you start, really. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of pages of this. Just trying to find the photographs here of, as I said, of family occasions of international importance from mostly from the First World War in East Africa. There's a lot to do, obviously, with racing and hunting, because that's what my family was interested in. There's also a lot in the second book, which is 1915. There's a lot of newspaper cuttings here from 1916, which showed effectively what was happening in Dublin at that time. The the terrible damage that was done to the centre of Dublin in that period. And this is stuff, obviously, that there's the GPO there, which is in ruins, as you can see. There's sort of barricades here with British soldiers and artillery and whatever. And these are, I suppose, I mean, you guys know a lot better than I would. I presume these are readily accessible anyway through the records of the national newspapers.
Yes, but it's valuable because they've been put in the scrapbook here. They're in your context of your family because they experienced this at the time. That's the sort of what makes them valuable in a separate way. It's not that they're in the scrapbook like this, you know.
Yeah.
Because I mean, she lived through this time, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, these would have been cut out of the newspapers on whatever date it is. I don't know if we can find a date on it. May the 3rd, 1916. Would have been the Daily Sketch was the newspaper, and then all these photographs of the GPO are cut out and pasted into the book. As you said, that would have happened on the 3rd of May 1916, so you know that was as contemporaneous as you say. And then mixed in with this is stuff coming from, as I said, from my grandfather, who was working under General Smuts in East Africa in the British Army, and just sending through his report saying, anxious about the family because obviously he heard about the troubles in Dublin, and then a week later saying, delighted, all well, everything good here. You know, that was the only way they could communicate at that stage. So I think they're interesting in their own right, but... mixing with that then is photographs of fishing holidays and, you know, and people trips and maps of German East Africa, and there's a lot of stuff here. You know, it's hard to describe it really.
It was a period, wasn't it, when so much was going on in the world. You had the World War One. You had the Rising. You had. So much trouble around, and to have it documented is interesting.
Well, you see here, there's a headline here, not exactly very politically correct these days, photographs of the men who carried the British flag to victory under General Smuts against the Hun in Africa. And one of them is my grandfather. There's a photograph of my grandfather there in the paper, obviously, as one of the people who was involved in that. But as I said, there's a lot of history there. That's General Botha there, who was one of the South African generals. And I think his son or his grandson was then in politics in South Africa. I mean, that's a very well-known name in South Africa. So.
But it's so beautiful to see everything together in this format, because these are the original cuttings from the papers.
Yeah.
There are all the handwritten notes. There are photographs. Yes. It's like
yes.
It's like a record.
And then photographs of the gardens of Mount Juliet there and things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's
like a family record.
It's a mismatch of everything, really.
Yeah.
I think it's really exciting, you know, to see it so meticulously put together.
There's photographs here of Castle Morris, which is a ruined house down between here and Kilmaganny somewhere,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
And I think that's now, that house is not there anymore. I think,
no, there's only some of the floor tiles out in the wood. You can see some of the floor tiles.
That's all. The house. I don't know if it's visible.
We've seen photographs of the house before.
My granddad used to actually work there, so...
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he was a Murphy, actually, from Hugginstown. He used to work there. Yeah.
Now it's told. Just a walk. You
it's
go
just a
there
walk
for
now.
Walk.
This is so exciting.
And there's photographs here of the fighting in East Africa, which was part of, probably not a well-known part of, but was part of the First World War.
This is in Tanzania now.
This is in,
it's German East Africa,
Whatever they were called.
It's Tanganyika.
British East Africa, yeah. German East Africa, Rhodesia, yeah. Which is now sort of Zambia and Zimbabwe and Tanzania.
That was a very tough campaign, actually.
There,
I think it was a very tough campaign, actually.
Something I know very little about, except for actually just looking at this. But my grandfather went out there at the beginning of the war, and he was then invalided back to the Europe with malaria, I think in about 1916 or 17. He then, it was a sort of mixed, if it could be even be called as a blessing, sort of mixed blessing, in that he then ended up then going to France, which was probably worse again. But at that stage, I think he'd been unwell, so he was then on the general staff, which I think parked themselves reasonably far back, I think, from the action. So I think he was okay at that stage. Shooting giraffes so they could feed the troops, and this is just, anyway. And then you get back to one of the big yards in Newmarket where the horses were trained, and the trainer, Hattie Pierce, who was a cousin of my grandfather's, who trained the famous horse, the Tetrarch, who everything was based really around here in Ballyvinch and Mount Juliet. This stuff here from General Smuts, that's sort of
a hand-drawn map, yes.
Map of, for almost sake, yeah. Zanzibar's there.
Yeah, that's Tanzania, yeah. They would call it Tanganyika, that's what the Germans call it.
British East Africa and Germany East Africa. Portuguese East Africa, which would be Mozambique now, yeah. Nyasaland.
And Malawi.
And then Rhodesia, which is Zimbabwe. And then Lake Victoria up here, which would have been Uganda. Yeah. Actually, Uganda's the same. Uganda's got the same name. But my grandfather, both my grandfather and my great-grandfather were not great photographers, but they were quite a lot of sketching went on. So they recorded quite a lot of their travels. That's old Ballylinch Castle, which is now no more.
Where was that?
That was over by the farmyard in Ballylinch.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
This is where they're building the farmyards, those sort of cattle sheds and hay sheds. When you go through the past the stallion yards and the cottages there, it's down to the left, and that was the remains there, the ruins of Ballylinch Castle, which was, I think, occupied by the Carricks. And then when they built Mount Juliet in 1760, this was obviously ruined.
Yeah.
And the Carrick family then moved across the river into
the house itself.
That's called the Red Gate Cottages. That's the back gate into Ballylinch Stud now. The main gate into Ballylinch Stud, actually.
Exactly.
That's the road from
near
the cricket pitch. The jocks is just up here.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
Then that's my grandfather's wedding, marrying one of the Cunninghams from Slane. One of the Mount Charles family. That's my grandfather and my grandmother. He was obviously always known in the press as the Tetrarch's owner. He wasn't recognised as being having any other meaning in life, really, other than being the Tetrarch's owner.
Yeah.
If I see this latest one, I'll show you something. Now, there's a letter here which I heard about, and I just found it in here a couple of days ago. And this is from a gentleman in Texas, and he didn't know. It's on an envelope here with American stamps, and there's no address written on the envelope. It's just a letter airmailed to the postmaster in Dublin, and written on the outside of it is, "Forward this letter to the gentleman who owns the great racehorse, the Tetrarch, as I don't know his name or address, but he is in Ireland." So the postmaster's then written on it, Major McCalm at Mount Juliet, Thomastown. So it was then delivered, and it's the heading is the Texas in Fort Worth, Texas. "Dear sir, I want to buy the Tetrarch. Give me your price by return mail, and I'll cable you if I want him. I know he is reported as not being able to get any more colts. The horse went infertile very early in his career. Maybe I could get one or two out of him. I don't want to deal through anybody but the owner."
Wow. Oh, it's fascinating, isn't
yeah.
it? A real piece of history associated
yeah.
with that horse.
Yeah. It's a letter from Rose, the person who did these books, my great-grandmother, to my grandfather. It's dated May the 18th, 1919. And he's just come back from the First World War. He's just had his first and only son, who was Victor, who was my father, who was born in April 1919. So this is about a month after my father was born.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just advising my great-grandmother, being pretty bossy and telling him how he should behave and how he should conduct his life. It's dated Sunday, May the 18th, 1919, Margaret Thomastown, County Kilkenny. It's addressed to Darlingest Boise, who was my grandfather, I believe. Dearest Girlie, who was my grandmother, who she didn't get on with at all. And Priceless Brat, who was my father, who was born a month prior
before,
to it.
Before, yeah.
I welcome you all home, and the best wishes. And with the best wishes, I wish you may all be happy, as happy here as I have been for the last 16 years. So 16 years takes you back to 1903, 1904, which is when my family first moved to Mount Juliet. Yeah. They rented the property from the Earls of Carrick, and then when my grandfather inherited money, they bought the property in, I think, about 1910, thereabouts. She goes on, I leave here naturally with the deepest regret, for I have put my heart and brains into what to me is the most beautiful, beautiful place on God's earth. I have, however, the great consolation of knowing you both love the place as I do and appreciate everything that I have done. Of course, for the moment, it is a wrench leaving here, and I feel like a fiddle without a string. I think at this stage, as I said, my grandparents were coming to live here, and I think my great-grandparents were moving out of the house so they could move in. Thank God I'm one of the hardy breed, and though old in years, I still have a young heart, and I'm sure we'll yet pick up some new strings and carry on to no man's land. Just one little word of advice to you. I want you to cultivate a light hand. People have often told me I had beautiful hands when I rode. Well, that nothing but sympathy. If you have sympathy, it will carry you through every hunt and all through your life, for you will never chuck your horse in the mouth, i.e. over-discipline your horse, or whatever, or override hounds, or wound the feeling of people around you. Money and position are nothing compared to sympathy, which will make you step so lightly on other people's feelings. I know you have not been well. My grandfather had, as I said, malaria towards the end of the war, and have had much to try you since your return from East Africa. I am sure that has caused you at times to be irritable and dictatorial, and not like the darling, gentle Boise you were before the war. Now, sweetheart, when you feel like snapping anyone's head off, just take a long breath and say hands, and you won't do it, and everyone will love you for your sympathy and work for you and with you so much better than if you were cross with them. With all my love, I am your devoted mother, Rose McCowan.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, it's so wise.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
So wise.
Well, that in itself is a bit of history, really, it's isn't lovely. It? I mean, you know, somebody coming back from the war, they didn't have PTSD or whatever it is then. They didn't have shell shock. They just got on with it, you know, step up a lift and move on and, you know.
But she was wise enough and intuitive enough to give that advice, you know, which would still hold today.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I like to think that he took that advice because he was very well liked.
Yes.
And that is always more important than anything else, isn't it?
Yeah. Be kind, really. Yeah.
But it says a lot about her and her character and the kind of person she was, her attitude.
She was a very strong person, there's no question about it. She was small in stature, but she was certainly very large in character. As you'll see coming through these books, really. Yeah. Collection of stamps here.
Oh, look, yeah.
And those stamps, which are franked or whatever, are not particularly valuable because they've got marks on them. But I just wondered if there was anything there.
Well, these are American, I would think.
It's American. There's a one penny English. Is that an English stamp? You bring you the magnifying
glasses.
That's unusual. I haven't seen that type. But these kind of stamps, I mean, in the UK they would have had the monarch's head on them, were quite common in this period. You know, these are obviously American presidents. One, that's Benjamin Franklin, that's Teddy Roosevelt, who this is.
Again, I don't know if there'd be any. I just came across these.
Yeah, these ones here are quite unusual, actually.
They're China. Aren't
they? Yeah, they're one penny on them, actually.
They're from the Chinese Empire or something, sir. So they're all the same.
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think they're. No, they're from the. It would be the Chinese Republic at this stage. I don't. They seem to have English currency on them. They're very unusual, actually.
There's a 4 cents one, Chinese Imperial something. Chinese Imperial 4. I don't know what the currency is. 4 cents.
I wonder if were the issue from the legations. You know, that were
they
in Beijing.
Wasn't it Shanghai where they had the...
The legations, as used to call them. That may be where they're from. That may be where they're from, why they're in, you know.
Hugh McCalmont, my great-grandfather, mm-hmm. was in China in the 1860s, 1870s. Mm-hmm. And he actually spent 2 years riding across China with a brother officer, the two of them, just on their own. Wow. Can you imagine doing that?
Imagine. And they made it back.
Maybe it's much safer then, I don't know.
It shows a lot, doesn't it, of, you know, the... pop, you know, the British colonies around the world, mm-hmm. the freedom of travel, mm-hmm. You could read so much into it.
Well, I think the influence that the British Empire had, you know, they said that whatever it was, the sun never set on it. Now they've ended up with Brexit, so maybe they got what they deserved.
There's a lovely photograph there, I think, of your... At a summer show or...
Yeah,
at that's a puppy show, maybe. They used to have the puppy show here, didn't they, every summer?
I don't know where that is, yeah. That's my grandmother and her sister. And that's my grandfather and my grandmother there. As I said, it's a complicated mixture of history and personal life.
So looking through that, what do you think... Is it something that's of great interest to the library, or?
I think it's of great interest to everyone in Kilkenny, not just the library, because this is a snapshot of a different world. I mean, as you were saying there earlier, even back in 1919, a very globalised world, actually, I mean, very international, you know, and afterwards Ireland became very parochial for a while, and now it's become quite globalised again. You see the amount of countries and the stamps from different places and everything. So it's quite international, actually. It's a snapshot of a world at a particular time. So it is very valuable, yeah.
And so what would happen if these, just to be clear, what would happen if they were in the library?
Well, my own view on these, I would get these digitised as quickly as possible, you know, because you can get them out to a wider audience. Mm. And I think you allow people to look at them and they will draw what they want out of them, do you know what I mean? Mm. I mean, around here we're looking at them to a particular prison, but other people may see other connections there, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's really handy if you have these things up online and things that people can come in and look at them themselves and even from their homes and use them for research and things. That'd be very valuable for social history.
Yeah. And how fast could that be done, Lisha? Is that a lot of work? Is a lot of time?
It is a lot of work, but they are so invaluable. Yeah, they're so invaluable, it would be a shame not to do it, you know, to put in the effort and do it. And then the originals are protected forevermore because people won't be handling them. You know, and people from all over the world, if they're digitized, can look at them and view them and get pleasure, even from their own family connections, from the workers' families to your own McCalmont family and relations that aren't here. You know, it's like a personal scrapbook and diary, and it's, you know, I mean, the effort that went into these documents and these books is just phenomenal. You know, so it would be brilliant to be able to share them with people.
How many people do you think were involved in doing this? Was it just...
I'd say one.
One lady?
Yeah. She was a very formidable character.
What was
she
her
died
name
long
again?
Before. Sorry. Rose.
Yes.
She was a Bingham. She was a lady in her own right. She was Lady Rose, I think it was Bingham, and then she married my great-grandfather. It's all in here. You'll find it all... These are the, if I may say, these are the yards in Norlands here down, which are still the same today, but these are them being built.
Yeah.
So this
and
is
that alone is so invaluable, really, from an architectural point of view,
it is,
isn't
for people down here.
Yeah, architectural built heritage.
Yeah. There's nothing, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing private here. I mean, it is a lot of family information, but it's history really now, and it's, you know, it's a long, long time ago. You know, I think we're very happy to share this, obviously, and I think it's important it is shared.
Maybe, you know, if the family wanted to keep the originals, they, after digitizing them, or if you wanted to give them on...
Well, we might. I think the first step, as you said, is to get them recorded before anything awful happens, and then after that, we can make a decision. We might easily keep the originals here, or else we could loan them, or, you know, whatever's. I would like to find the missing link. I'd like to find the. Is it 11? No,
it's one after this one, isn't it?
1911. It's 11 to 15, yeah, which would be very important, that, because that's the outbreak, obviously, of the First World War. Yeah. New Orleans here was purchased by my family, I think, in 1912. I mean, these, for example, this is Cape Town, photographs of Cape Town in sort of the 1914. I think my grandfather's on his way to join the army in East Africa. So these are original photographs taken of Cape Town, Lanshead, which is now known as Lance Kop. I mean, I know Cape Town fairly well. Table Mountain there, you know, just it'd be very interesting to see if you could actually equate this with current landscape. You know, what's actually there now? Because you see now it's just countryside, but to my knowledge, this is all, you know, Cape Town city.
Okay.
So, you know, things like that would be interesting as well.
And in doing that, will you put together a report of what you find, or will it go to a period of archiving and, you know, kind of discovering what it is that's in it? I know it takes time, but, you know, would that happen?
Well, I mean, what I would normally do in the situation, I would make a recommendation to the county librarian, you know, and then we'd have to make a decision on how we proceed after that.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the process we go through, basically. I mean, normally with this kind of a project, we wouldn't scan these ourselves. We get notice outside agencies would do that, and they would assess these from a preservation point of view as well when they'd be doing that. You know, we always do that before we actually digitise anything. We see if there's any preservation issues. These are in very good condition, so I would think there's very little. Yeah. Sometimes you'd have material that would be in poor condition, and you'd have to do some conservation work on it first before you would digitise it, obviously.
Yeah.
And
no, you can see how well they've been kept.
Yeah, no, they're in very good condition, actually, so that wouldn't be a huge concern. But that's the process, basically, you would go through. You know, you'd have to see some conservation issues first before you would do anything else. And after that, then you would, we would normally, you know, we involved with an outside agency, would digitise them then.
Yeah.
And then you would decide on what sort of platform you would mount them on then afterwards, you know. Yeah. You know, we have our own portal here, in, we have the Kilkenny Digital Archive, but we are linked in with international portals as well that could put more, that can link into us, you know, to get into a wider audience.
Yeah.
You know, because these will be for, there will be academic interest in these as well, you know, so... We would sometimes work with people like the Digital Repository of Ireland, you know, because they link into the European network that way, you know, for researchers and things.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's very exciting.
Yeah. Well, it's always with the sources, anything we put up is to get into as wide an audience as possible. Yeah. So you're looking at the public, but you're also looking at, you know, an academic audience as well, you know, in other European countries, you know, which being other European countries would have similar records to these from their houses and estates as well, you know. So people often like to compare them, you know, to see similar and contrasts and things.
Yeah. What do you think of all that?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I'm just looking at a couple of things here. There's a headline here over the photographs of the destruction in Dublin in May the 5th, 1916. And the headline is, "Out of the Ashes of Tragedy, Spring Ireland's Hopes." I think that's an interesting quote from 1916 and... With Joe Biden's visit, we're still hoping, aren't we? You know? We're still working on that. It's a work in progress.
Headline, isn't it?
But it's a work in progress 107 years later, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's pages here from the Kilkenny people of that same time listing all the houses destroyed in Dublin, from Lower Sackville Street, Upper Sackville Street, Middle Abbey Street, Earl Street, Eden Quay. And in an extraordinary way, just saying who occupied each of the houses, the businesses, the individual families, and then evaluation of the destruction at £241,000 which obviously was an unbelievable amount of money in that time, and the fact that the centre of Dublin was pretty well destroyed. And that again is you know, is contemporaneous, and it's interesting, it's of the time. And then photographs here of James Connolly, and he's termed as Jim Larkin's first lieutenant. Again, the context that it was put into because of the person and her background and what way she was what angle she was looking at it from, and obviously other people have different angles to look at it.
That's what makes it so unique, because it's Rose's perspective, really.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You know, and we're looking at it all these years later here today, and hoping then to be able to share it with a much, much wider audience.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. See, there's the Hibernian Bank in O'Connell Street, in burnt out ruin. And then the drapery establishment for Cleary and Company.
Yeah,
seen in the background, again, completely destroyed. So, you know, it's just, I find it fascinating, I must say, because it's as I say, it's of the time, isn't it?
But the telegrams then coming from your grandfather.
On the same date, and photographs here from Mombasa, which original photographs here, which are stuck in.
But in his telegrams are everything okay at home?
Yeah, and he's worried about them, and they're worried about him. So you know, it was a time of turmoil and change, and I think our generation is extremely fortunate that we didn't have to go through anything like that. Thank goodness, and hopefully never will.
Yeah.
See again another telegram there, just all well, you know, just saying from the expeditionary force message.
That was the communication of the time, you know.
Yeah, that was the WhatsApp or the email.
Yeah. And some drawings then here.
I'm not sure what that is actually. It's something, if you could probably look at it in a mirror, you could probably see what it says.
It's blotting paper, isn't it?
For whatever reason, they've kept the blotting, but I didn't get around to looking at it. Because
in detail.
Yeah, there's so much stuff in it.
You could spend hours, I'm sure.
Yes, I know.
It may take resources and time, but it's a question of what you can devote to it and what you can do with it. But maybe that's the...
Then you see prisoners in Germany, so...
Yeah, these are... this would have been a relation of my great-grandmother's, Barry Bingham. He was obviously a prisoner in Germany. He's from the Navy in September 1915. A photograph of him with brother officers in these officers were taken prison in the naval station of Jutland, naval action off Jutland. So that was the Battle of Jutland. Obviously they were picked up by German vessels and interned. These are inside and outside photographs of my Juliet. And if you go into the house now, you'll see the actual rooms, but obviously they're very differently. Furnished, being as is now a hotel, and that's my great grandfather Hugh outside the front of Mount Juliet. That wing had been destroyed by fire. But the house itself was obviously never damaged during the troubles, which was a blessing. That's the front of the house, and then again, that's my grandfather there holding a dog. So that would have been probably about 1908 or 9 or so about. I mean, he was born in 88, so he'd have been maybe 8, yeah. He'd have been 12, probably 1906 he'd have been 8, he'd have been 18. Is there a date on it? No.
No. I'm just looking to see who else is in it. Yeah. Miss Dunn, Captain Brown. Miss Conlon. And Furry.
Well, it hasn't changed much. It looks very similar now. We should go and look at it. I mean,
Why do you think Mount Juliet survived and a lot of other houses were burnt down locally?
I don't honestly know. I really don't know.
Is it because of the employment that they were giving here?
Well, I know growing up, I mean, you were very lucky if your family worked in the estate, and the families were very, very well looked after and spoke very fondly of the McAlmonts. And, you know, so there was always good feeling, you know, for the estate. It was, you could go in and out as a child as you wanted to, You know, it was a very welcoming place, you know, so maybe people felt, you know, kindly about the estate and didn't want to harm it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's maybe a reason, or just luck.
Yeah, I think it did. But I think a lot of it too was, I think a lot of the unoccupied or the absentee landlords were tended to be burnt out, but people who were actually were living there and were supporting the local economy maybe were better treated or better thought of.
I think what you're saying there is very true. Any of the houses that were trying to be unoccupied, you know, other people moved into them.
Like Woodstock.
Yeah,
exactly.
And either the Black and Tans, the auxiliaries, or poor anti-treaty forces, and they became targets then by the other side, basically.
Where do we go from here, then?
Well, I will obviously have to talk to the county librarian, and we proceed from there, basically.
And some people don't realise the value of what they have.
No,
that's the hardest bit.
Yeah.
It's great that you realise and are willing to share.
Well, I've been looking at these with, you know, I've been showing them to people who might be interested in friends and things and relations for a long time, and I've been meaning to do something about it, so I'm very glad that we're looking at it now, and hopefully...
Oh, that's great. And tell me, from your memory... As a child, do you remember these? Have you?
No.
Where did you inherit them, or how did they come into your hands?
I really honestly don't know. I mean, when we sold Mount Juliet and we left Mount Juliet, there were rooms full of documents and papers and books, and I mean thousands and thousands of books, and I think these ones probably we noticed that the the family history side of them and kept them, but Lord only knows what else there was there, but it's not, this is what we have now.
And it's wonderful that you saved them, you know, and that they survived under your watch, really.
Well, as you said, it's probably more luck than anything else.
Yeah. No, but there's so much of your family history in these, and Mount Juliet and the McCalmonds were an important family in the county, and it would be wonderful, wonderful to see them in the public arena, you know, out there.
Yeah.
Well, they might be of interest to somebody who's, you know, doing research or whatever. I mean, it's good to have it available to people, so I think it's important that people should.
And Leisha, because you were so local to the area, they're extra special, aren't they?
They are, and I'd absolutely love to just sit here with my glasses on and go through them.
Well,
you know, they're just so lovely. There's so much in them.
Yeah.
You know,
just give me a call if you want to come around and come sit here and have a look at them. Certainly.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know, all of the memories, you know, are centred around, because our worlds were quite small at the time. There weren't phones, there weren't computers, you know, so we grew up in the countryside, and we were let out in the summer holidays in the morning, and you didn't come back till evening, you know.
Yeah.
So it was literally having such a lovely natural playground to play in, you know, a very healthy way to grow up, you know, and our imagination then, you know, and then to see these, you know, there's so much more in these books. There really is. It would be awesome to share them.
Yeah. So, Harry, thank you so much. I mean, to have the opportunity to come here to see them is great.
Well, it's great for me, too, because I think, you know, that they should be shared, and I'm very happy to do so.
Brilliant. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you.
No, I think it was extremely fortuitous that you were put in touch with me by Robert Goff, and came down here probably for a slightly different mission, but when you were down here, we started looking at these books and discussing them, and you knew the right people to contact to take it to the next stage, and that's what we're going to do.
Our job is to share information, you know, one way or another, so that's what's so brilliant when people...
It's been beautifully kept, Kilkenny, and the way the council have kept the both architecturally and historically has been fantastic, and it's very important to all of us. You know,
it is
where our hearts are, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's for our future generations as
absolutely.
Well. You know,
yeah, it's very important that they know about it.
And, and it's sympathetically done.
Yeah.
Would it be okay maybe just to take a photograph of it as it is?
That we can show the county librarian when we go back.
The books. Just to show her what they look like, because it'll help to explain it to her.
I'd let her in there because it probably belongs in there rather than anywhere else.
Would you think that'd be a good idea, Declan? Just to show Josephine.
And that's an interesting statue because that is General Sir Hugh, who was my great grandfather. That was made up as a presentation of when he retired from the army. That was made up of the silver and the gold braid on his uniform.
Oh.
So if you feel the weight of that, that was the weight on his coat.
Oh, Lord. That's a workout in itself, carrying that around.
Yeah. That was what he was wearing on his shoulders and on his chest.
You've been listening to Harry McAlmont, Declan McCauley and Alicia Dunphy. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. And if you'd like more information about our latest collection, The Landed Gentry in Ireland, it has just been posted on our website. That's irishlifeandlore.com. I'm Maurice O'Keefe and thank you for listening.